Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week, we have two stories from two writers on Medium.com. And here is When Acting Like a Lady Is Not Your Thing by Virginia Dolan. Or at least it sure isn't mine. At the prime age of 30, I thought I had the hairy, scary logistics of life figured out. I have a good job, loyal friendships, live in one of the most amazing, yet fog-covered cities in the nation, and for the most part am very comfortable in my own skin. That is, until my most recent relationship. 9 months in and, oh boy, things were going great. Meet the parents. Check. International travel adventure. Check. Public displays of social media love and affection. Check, yeah. He even created our very own Google Calendar. So much adulting, I know. With words of affirmation like, I think you are so amazing and so different from any other woman I've dated. We literally fell in love on a beach with a song playing about falling in love on a beach. I wish I was joking. Would make any woman feel secure, right? Right. And then it happened. Out of nowhere, our relationship came to an abrupt halt. Boom! It was over in one night, 1 hour, one closed door, one sorrow-filled goodbye. Until this point, I'd rarely had any internal questions about my identity or femininity. But when the love of your life, your trusted partner in crime, ends your relationship because you call me dude and bro a lot, and I really don't like that. Sometimes it makes me feel as if I'm just hanging around with a guy friend. Oh no, how horrible. A friend? He goes on. When you refer to yourself as manly or a tomboy, it just really makes me uncomfortable. Did I, hear that right? Cue some T-Swift, turn up blank space on repeat, and digest that for a moment. So, wait, I'm too... what? Let me start by saying that I do not identify as being masculine or androgynous. My supposed androgynous habits could potentially be defined through the occasional baseball cap, white sneakers, or the fact that I prefer bandeau bras instead of real ones. Sure. Post-breakup, my mind was racing to identify habits or characteristics that could have led me to looking or acting like a dude. I kept asking myself, am I really manly? Should I be wearing, like, more bronzer? Less Old Spice? More Dove? Those feathered eyelash extensions that are so trendy now? Maybe. Is that really what guys want? Is it? What would make me appear more ladylike, more desirable, more worthy of being loved? I caught myself making subtle changes to appear more feminine. Gel nails, pedicures, higher heels. I even had my eyebrows waxed. Coming from a girl who has curled her hair a total of 5 times in her life, each time looking more horrific than the last. After suffering from copious amounts of anxiety and confusion, it finally hit me. I can only describe this awakening as a strange slap in the face. I like to assume it was from the mother herself, screaming to crawl back into my skin and, girl, shine bright. Turns out I had this thing completely turned around. This breakup was not about me at all. It was about him. His insecurities, his fears were the explanation for what catapulted our relationship into what now felt like a hollow land of superficiality. Was it that he suffered with insecurities of traditional male dominance? Maybe he felt threatened and feared losing his place in the ring with the other alpha males? Or who knows, maybe he lacked confidence in his own sexuality. Was I going to try and figure this out? Nah. What I think? If you're dating someone who slams your quirks, then ditch that guy and run the other way fast. Feel like wearing that snapback girl? Do it. Prefer oversized tees from the boys' section? Get those too. Stay true to yourself and find the things that make you special. Then, celebrate them. And remember, when life gives you lemons, you better believe I'm going to make some lemonade, bro. Or maybe an Arnold Palmer or whatever. Remember, you can find Virginia Dolan on Medium.com if you'd like to check out more of her stories. If you're enjoying these stories and my podcast, you can become my podcast patron. Just go to my Podbean page and click on Become a Patron. Wonderful stories for just a buck. Our next story is by Christiana White. And here is Turning Tail. A couple of years ago, I took my kids and our golden retriever, Daisy, to Buenos Aires, Argentina. The plan was to live there for a couple of years. I wanted the kids to learn Spanish and experience living abroad, and I wanted to study tango. Shortly after we arrived, I met a man who captivated me. He had intelligent dark eyes, glossy black hair, and a mien that was plaintive and devilish by turns. I thought he was a Renaissance man. He'd run a successful business, owned a farm, helped the poor. He was gruff and rough, with strong hands. He knew the land. I fell hard for him and fantasized for months about how he'd ensconce me and my daughter. In my imagination, my son would be at college by then, on an estancia, or ranch, in Argentina's vast plain, where she'd become an expert horsewoman, learn to speak Spanish fluently, and then be off to some spangled university on full scholarship, with the romance of the plain hot in her blood. I thought this man was a genius, for some reason. And although I'm famous for being an extreme commitophobe, the truth about me is that when I do commit, I'm in. This is exactly why I don't commit. Other people seem to be able to say, I love you, and then somehow unsay it in a few months or years later by leaving, or divorcing, or what have you when their feelings have changed. I make sure that doesn't happen by not promising in the first place. It's like the homeless woman who approached me on the street many years ago. I was skeptical of her story, but the second I decided to believe her, I didn't give her a dollar. I took her to the bank, got her a wad of cash, and bought her a train ticket to Sacramento. I also took her to the train station and bought her a meal. There didn't seem to be any point to me in partially believing her story, which is why I was so stung when I encountered her in the same place, telling the same story a few days later. Anyway, I committed to this black-eyed Argentine scamp. So when troubling incidents began to arise, I willfully ignored them. Now, of course, I see landmines littering the landscape from the get-go. The not-too-good teeth shouldn't have been ignored. As a gringa, however, I thought, oh, poor thing, he grew up poor. It's not his fault. I also thought, gee, since he's a land and business owner, why doesn't he fix his black tooth? I chalked it up to his independent spirit, his purity. The second and huge red flag was his appalling living quarters. Unfortunately, I was already gone hook, line, and sinker and chose to ignore the relative squalor in which he lived in the city. He said it was his sister's apartment, that his farm was his real home. He just crashed there when in the city. He was a cowboy who needed very little. I saw him as a romantic stoic who needed nothing but a drink of water, a kind of Thoreau who could survive anywhere. This only added to his mystique. This was, by the way, the second time I ignored this important red flag. Another famous boyfriend that I gave a decade of my life to had dried pasta stuck on the walls of his apartment. That was a bad sign, too. Don't ask. I know. Once, when we were making love, I saw in my Argentine lover's eyes that he didn't love me. I shivered and chose to ignore it. He told me that he had been married years before, that his wife had left him, and now lived 18 hours outside the city in a separate house on the farm. They had an agreement, he said. She was Swedish and didn't speak Spanish well, but she wanted to stay in Argentina. He was obliged to help find a situation for her. He was working on it. I believed him. My kids didn't like him, but they could see I was over the moon for him. They'd never seen me like this. I had never brought anyone home to them, never let anyone come this close to us in the entire decade previous. They tried to hang in there. Once, my friend brought us to the beach. He picked us up in a rusting-out, once-upon-a-time white car that looked to be on its last legs. Many cars in Buenos Aires look this way or close to this way. But no, I had to admit, his was one of the worst. He said it was one of his fleet of rental cars. His good cars were all being let out at the moment. Sorry. It was a sweltering summer day, and the car had no air conditioning. Our luggage, the kids, and the dog barely fit. There were no seat belts, but that was nothing new either. There were very few cars with seat belts in the country, according to my experience. My kid's dad was from Venezuela, and there were certainly no seat belts there either, or at least none in use any of the times we'd been there. On the way to the beach, my friend hit me up for all of the road tolls. I saw my son watching that carefully. We were all slick with sweat and panting in the heat. When my kids complained, my friend launched into a lecture verging on diatribe about the spoiled kids of North America and how good this was for them. I completely agreed with him. At the beach, nothing went right. My friend found fault with the place I'd rented on Airbnb. He criticized my bourgeois leanings. It was too Tony for him. It was not Tony, it was just a house. It made him uneasy. He lectured me and my kids constantly on crime and staying safe in Argentina. He'd eye us critically, mock my kids for having their cell phones out, shake his head like we were hopeless. He had brought some traditional Argentine games. We went to the beach. My kids thought the games were dumb. My friend was intensely stung and stomped off to sulk behind a sand dune. My son laughed at him. I was stricken, frantic, unsure of what to do. I ran from my friend to my son, trying to bridge the two. Later that day, some other altercation ensued. A feeling of dread began mounting in my chest. The kids began acting out seriously. I began losing my voice from yelling at them to behave, beseeching them. My friend became even sulkier, if that was possible. He was like a black storm cloud. When we went into the bedroom for a nap, he locked the door. My heart clenched. I remember how he'd said I needed a lock on the bedroom door in our Buenos Aires apartment, and how that had bothered me, and I'd ignored it. I didn't want to turn a lock against my kids. I tried to overlook this, too. Of course, he wanted privacy for us. Of course, I should want this, too. Things went from bad to worse. My kids were fighting and unhappy. He grew increasingly irritated. I was frantically trying to manage his mood. At some point, he stomped off again, and I followed him. He suggested we go out to dinner, just the two of us. We went back to the house to change clothes. When I opened the door, the kids, contrite, had made us a beautiful chicken dinner. I told them they had behaved abominably, that we were going out to dinner, and we left. It seared me to the core to do that. It sears me to remember it. The man was a monster, a master manipulator, a child, a classic narcissist. He was insatiable, taking whatever I could give him and more. I gave him an iPhone, a beautiful little laptop, upteen meals, shelter in my home, my body, my bed, my trust. I subjected my kids to him. He gave me HPV. Once, he brought a box of alfajores over, the Argentine national cookie. The box held pride of place in the center of the dining room table. My daughter happened to eat the last one, and this man threw a temper tantrum. He complained she didn't respect him. He closed the kitchen door against her. He told me he loved me. "Only wait for I show you," he said. Several times he had to go to the farm. He said he would bring me as soon as he could, but not yet. I accompanied him in the taxi to the bus station. We munched at medialunas, Argentine croissants, and drank coffee in the terminal before his departure. When he was gone, I missed him. He'd text me his return time a week hence, and I'd meet him at the terminal, eagerly scanning for his profile in the windows of the buses turning in, one after the other. One of these times, about 8 months into our relationship, he got off the bus and said, casually, that his wife was coming to the city soon, and he didn't want any trouble, and please would I do him a favor and refrain from coming to the Milonga, the tango dance hall, while she was in town. I was dumbfounded. When I confronted him later, he sighed like I was a pesky child who understood nothing and said simply, I told you, we were separated. She lives in the country, I live in the city. This is a story about a mom who acted foolishly and almost forsook her kids. It's a story about manipulation and deception. It's a classic cross-border tale of the naive tourist being taken advantage of by the wily native. One day while I was sitting at our kitchen table, a force rose up inside of me that was indomitable, unshakable, and impossible to ignore. I wish I could remember what triggered it. All I knew was that suddenly I wanted to go home. I wanted to get away from Buenos Aires and this man. I booked tickets home, and I couldn't do it fast enough. Once I'd made my decision, it became urgent. My daughter's jaw dropped when I told her. She was elated. My son had already left 4 months previous. He flew the coop because he missed his girlfriend. We didn't even have anywhere to stay in the U.S. Our home was leased for another 4 months. I decided that I'd figure that out as I went along. The important thing was to go ASAP. I'm sorry to say that while I withdrew from my friend and began protecting myself and my kids finally, I didn't tell this man off. In fact, when he approached me with a great business idea to invest in a small apartment in the city, one he would be happy to manage for a fee, I did. This is a story of temporary insanity, but it's also the story of the two-faced nature of reality. I can just as easily tell this story from the viewpoint of the person I was when I was in love with this rogue. And that story would be true, too. In fact, I have told it. To look at this story and that one, you would think it was impossible that both are true. Yet they are. I am not proud of my behavior or my poor judgment. I'm ashamed of it. However, I am not ashamed of trying. I'm not ashamed of finally sticking up for myself and my family in the face of a passive-aggressive megalomaniac, though it took far too long. I'm not ashamed of my trusting nature, though I wouldn't mind acquiring a little more wisdom. We are home now. The kids forgave me. In fact, and incredibly, I don't believe they ever faulted me. They worried, they waited, but they did not judge me. They love me and want the best for me. I am blessed beyond all belief. You can find more stories from Christiana White at medium.com. Thanks so much for listening. And if you're a writer or author and want to hear your stories in audio and they fit the Does This Happen to You theme, please connect with me. You can find me on Twitter at ChrisKKArya, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Remember, it's Chris with a K.